Today's Lovely Does Not Compute sponsor is Rollbar, one of the best and easiest ways to deal with errors in your apps. Rollbar is super easy to integrate with all the most popular languages and frameworks. That means you can be up and running, tracking production errors and deployments in as little as 8 minutes. I've done it myself, and it really is that easy. Rollbar also plays nice with all the other tools you love. You can send errors to Slack or HipChat, easily create GitHub, Jira, or Pivotal tracker issues, track your Heroku deploys, and more. It's pretty cool, and again, really easy to set up. With Rollbar, you won't have to dig through logs to debug issues anymore, or have to rely only on user-reported bugs. Everything is automated. Lots of great companies depend on Rollbar to help them improve their own apps, including Heroku, Twilio, Kayak, Instacart, Zendesk, and Twitch. Make sure to take a look at Rollbar by visiting rollbar.com/DNC. The best part? If you sign up with that link, they'll give you 90 days on their Bootstrap plan, totally free. Check out rollbar.com/DNC today.
I had somewhat of a nostalgic morning, though, Paul. I looked up an email address for an old teacher that I had, a teacher that I thought was just a great teacher. To this day, he's still my favorite teacher, and sent him a quick note.
Just to say hi and thanks?
Yeah, so this teacher, Mr. McClintock, he is, from what I could gather when I was younger, he really cared about everything that he taught. He was very enthusiastic about everything, and I took physics from him, and I took an intro to computer science class in high school with him. And so I was thinking about it, and I sent him a quick email just saying, hey, you know, thanks for being really into what you were teaching and making it, you know, exciting for us, because now I do that for a living. In my, you know, my first major exposure to anything like that in regards to computers was in his class.
Nice. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm using Polymail, so I know when he'll read it. That's another topic for another day, though.
Yeah. Email clients, man.
But I thought it'd be fun today to just talk about where we've come from, you know, how we got into programming and kind of our stories, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
And I always enjoy hearing people's stories, where they came from and how they got to be where they are. So my story starts way back. I don't even remember what year it was. So I'm 29 now, and I must have been, man, maybe like 13 or 14, maybe even earlier than that. But so I always played computer games growing up. We'd go visit my mom's parents, my grandparents, and my grandpa was retired, and he would always be up at 4 a.m. playing Age of Empires and Warcraft, the original Warcraft, when they were still real-time strategy games. So I would always wake up and play video games with him, and so that's kind of how I got introduced to that. And I played, basically, when I was growing up, I played this game called Infantry. I think it was by Sony, but it was like a MMO shooter. You could just go online, and it was pixel-based, and it was like RPG shooter style. And then I played Age of Empires a whole lot, and Warcraft before it turned into the current style of Warcraft.
Age of Empires was the first game that ever made me do an all-nighter.
Really?
Yep. Original Age of Empires, just getting through all those ages, man. You just look up at 6 a.m.
Yeah. I played it so much. And then when the LAN feature came out, my brother and I would play it quite a bit, because we had two desktop computers, PCs. The first one was a Super VGA, which is super old. And then after that, we had various like Dells, and Compaq Presario was one of the ones we had, I remember. But yeah, we had the computer set up in the living room, and we would play against each other. And I don't know, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun just kind of learning how to strategize and make calculated decisions, I suppose. But it was also just fun building as many units as you could and pillaging the other players. I think, you know, we fast forward a little bit back to when I was maybe 13. I can't really remember when, but my dad brought me the Macromedia stuff, the software, before Adobe bought them. And I think it came with Flash and Dreamweaver, maybe Fireworks, like way back in the day. And basically what I did was I made those prefab flash buttons that Dreamweaver let you make. I think there was like a little panel where you could drag buttons and things. It would just drop a little flash player or flash movie, and you could customize the design of it. I didn't do anything really useful with it. That's all I really did, which is kind of drag stuff into Dreamweaver. And I also remember right around that time, my dad was trying to explain to me what CSS was. I distinctly remember talking about CSS with him, but I really wasn't grasping what he was talking about at the time. And so, I had Macromedia Dreamweaver for a while. And then at school, a friend of mine named Arlen, he was really into making RPG games. And we used, I don't know if it's the same incarnation as it is now, but we used a program called RPG Maker. And you basically set up story and you set up, you know, you could actually basically draw your map out and then you could go through and play your game. And I always thought that was really fun, just kind of creating different worlds and creating maps. And mine were always really terrible and his were always really good because he was more into the storytelling aspect of it and I just wanted to make stuff. So my games always kind of felt hollow, but I spent a lot of time doing that between making RPGs and playing Age of Empires. And I also played football and baseball and wrestled, but you know, besides sports, that's pretty much all I did. Those are my only hobbies.
Yeah, I did all those same things as a kid, except all of the sports. Just the games.
Except any of the sports?
Just the non-physical activities.
I really enjoyed the sports, but it was a lot of time and money invested into something that we'll never ever see a return in my life. But I guess that's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, that's kind of how I ended up with guitar, for better or worse. It was like something that I was really passionate about for a while, and then am less passionate about now, and that's okay.
Yeah, at least you have insight and you have experience from learning those things or dedicating yourself to something for a while. So there's nothing, I guess, lost in that. But besides that, you know, I would just hang out with Arlen and make RPGs, and my games were terrible and bad, and his were pretty sick. And then around that time, I think I was a sophomore in high school at this point, but there was the same teacher, Mr. McClintock, that I talked about. He was teaching an intro to computer science class, and I knew it was a pretty small class, so I took it, and we learned QBasic, or the basics of programming with QBasic, on these super old machines that were in the chemistry lab, in like a little side alcove in the chemistry lab. And I think I may have mentioned this a while back on the show, but my final project was making the Two Towers game where you could shoot from one tower to the other, and if the projectile detonated, it would actually take a chunk out of the mountain.
Scorched Earth style.
Yeah, Scorched Earth, exactly. Yeah, so I made that. And then my friend Alex Scriven, who actually, a few years ago, he graduated from Purdue, so he's a programmer now as well, but he made Breakout with a map editor.
Oh, man.
And so it was one of those things where I was like, oh, this is awesome. I made Scorched Earth. And then I look over at his computer, and then suddenly what I had done was trash. He was like, oh, I'm just making all these maps, and he's saving them out into files. It's like, what? But I just specifically remember around that time, Mr. McClintock being really just like excited about what he was teaching us, and it really stuck with me. And it didn't hurt that I already liked computers and already liked kind of the technical side of things, but he just kind of really made it work. And even, I mean, I took physics with him as well, and he made physics fun. And there are some people that are just physics people that enjoy that stuff, and there are like most of the world who are not like that at all. And I think that he kind of bridged that gap. He would do things like, he called it the brain food jar, but it was really just a jar full of candy. And so if you were active and participating in class and answering questions, you got rewarded with lemon drops. And I got a lot of lemon drops. And if you did your homework, actually, if you actually did your homework, because I think it was every day that we had that class, he would give us 20 problems. So he didn't believe in busy work. He didn't believe in assigning us just homework just to have homework. He would assign us 20 problems, and those 20 problems, maybe 3 or 4 question sets, were geared towards the same concept. So you would answer a similar question or use the same formula 3 or 4 different times. And what that did was force me to actually learn how to memorize things in repetition like that, which I thought was amazing. It wasn't 100 questions to solve. It was just 20 questions that were really focused and helped me actually understand the material. And so that actually went a long way into helping me learn how to program, like learn how to memorize programming concepts, or learn how to memorize even just, you know, programming language APIs.
That's pretty interesting to hear, actually, because that's very similar to how I was taught math, where I would have a focus on just one concept and just all the problems would be about that concept for a while, and then move on to the next one once the one was really solid. And each one would build on the last and then just kind of advance you that way.
Yeah, it's a great way to learn. And I'm seeing a lot of kind of web tutorials go that route as well. You just kind of learn bits and pieces at a time and reinforce those pieces and then move on to the next concept. I was never really a fan of busy work. I definitely had math classes where we had a ton of homework and it was just kind of the same thing over and over again. So I wasn't interested in it. But the way he went about it just really made it stick. So I guess we can fast forward to after high school. I kind of went through high school and I got into music a lot and I started playing guitar. And computers were kind of always there. So this was like my big guitar phase. I was practicing a lot, playing a lot, doing the band stuff. And so after high school, I worked for a year because I decided that was good for experience and money. And I worked in a factory and it was terrible. And so I ended up going back to school and I went to a community college first with the intentions of transferring to university to save money. I took an intro to Java class and hated it so much. But I think that was probably more because of the teacher, the way the teacher taught us. He was very unforgiving, we'll say. He was very like, this is my way, or, you know, if it's not my way, it's not correct at all. So it was kind of a hard class to adjust to, and I didn't like it at all. So what I ended up doing was getting really into art. And so I started messing around with Photoshop quite a bit and started making like band posters. And I think around this time, MySpace was pretty big. So I would be working on like MySpace layouts and things like that. So very minimal like HTML coding, but lots of like fancy, not even fancy, really just grungy Photoshop work. And then from there, I went to university and I started studying music and music industry. And the school I went to, the music industry program, I think this is actually where I started to get to know Bryn better, because I'd known him when I was younger. But really in college is when he was in the music industry degree and I was there as well. And so we started spending more time together. And the teacher, the head of that department, just kind of took off. So then there was no more music industry degree. And so I switched to...
They just canceled the program?
Yeah, he was like, I'm taking a job in North Carolina, see ya.
But well, college didn't like replace him? It was
replaced him, but it was not great. It was just really kind of in shambles.
Sure.
This guy was like, I'm here and I'm doing this thing and wait, what are we doing again? How did it work before? Like he, you know, just kind of came in and it was just totally different, a different vibe. So I ended up switching to graphic design and I took all the art classes, ceramics, which I hated so much. Because I had a girlfriend and we just broke up and we were in the same ceramics class, which is a studio arts class, which means that the classes are 3 hours long. So we had to be in the room with each other for 3 hours a day for 5 days a week, which was not great. So I took all those art classes and I started trying to do some freelance work on the side, just doing a lot of like print design as I was working through the graphic design degree. And I ended up having opportunity to go on the road to play guitar. And so I figured, you know what, I'm already making a living on the side doing graphic design. So I don't see the point in going farther into debt. So I decided to just leave school. And I still remember coming home and I had made the decision to drop out of college and I was going into my senior year. And I sat my parents down and I said, I need to talk to you about something. And I remember this because I don't know how they knew, but I looked at my mom and she looked at me and she said, so when are you leaving? And 2 weeks later, I was on a bus. I spent, I don't know, maybe 6 years just kind of traveling and playing and doing the whole musician thing. And while I was on the road, I got as much time as I could. I saved up for a MacBook and I learned how to program on the side because I had a lot of designer friends who were all competing for work. And I decided, you know, I'd done some programming in the past. I might as well learn how to do it. And that way I can kind of create a job market for myself. And it ended up working out. So while I was on the road, I would take on a project here and there, mainly just kind of working on WordPress sites, making themes. And they started out really, really bad and slowly they started getting better. And my forte was making a design look like, or making, you know, the template actually look like the design as close as I could. That's what ended up being, you know, my way of actually getting work was, hey, my work looks like how you design it. And people seem to like that. So I ended up freelancing, I don't know, for 3 years maybe. Right around the third year, Paul, is when I met you. And we had started talking on Skype.
Yeah, so that would have been like early-ish 2012.
Right, yeah, early 2012. And my JavaScript skills were bad, so bad. jQuery soup. My JavaScript skills were more or less like, there's a plugin that does this and I'm going to try and use it. And if it conflicts with another plugin, I'll find another one.
Yep. I definitely had that period as well. I think a lot of people back then did.
Yeah, but there was nobody that encouraged me to learn JavaScript. Like everywhere you Googled or looked, jQuery was a thing and you just had to use jQuery and that was it. No one was like, you should probably learn how to use JavaScript because that's how jQuery is built. Or if you don't know how to program JavaScript, there's no way you can actually fix anything that might go wrong with a plugin. So I was just using jQuery and that was my programming. So whenever a theme required more heavy JavaScript, I just kind of hacked it together and it barely would work, but it just kind of like some terrible solutions. And then you guys called me up on the right day and I was like, yeah, I'm going to leave my band and I'm kind of tired of this lifestyle and talk to my family and talk to my brother about it and ended up moving to California.
And it's been hell ever since.
It's been, it's been interesting. I mean, the cool thing is that I enjoy programming almost as much as, you know, touring. So for me, it's not unfulfilling or anything like that. I feel like I still am lucky to do a job that I really enjoy. You know, I really enjoy programming. I really enjoy writing applications and solving problems. And so it's been really rewarding, fulfilling.
I feel like that's something that's so important to keep in mind, because as frustrating as programming jobs can be, as frustrating as the programming industry can be as a whole, all of us who are fortunate enough to work in it are just so, so lucky.
Yeah. I mean, so people ask me what I do and I'll say I'm a programmer and I get all sorts of questions after that. Like, well, what actually does that mean? Or what kind of stuff do you work on? Or, you know, what's your typical day like? And I'll explain to people, yeah, I ride my bike to the office and I'd pour myself some coffee and then I'd turn music on and then I just type. And when I say it like that, I mean, obviously I do more. There's a lot more mentally taxing things involved. But when I say it like that, like, I can't complain about where I ended up at all. I mean, granted, I've been really lucky. So I've always been able to find people that would invest in me. So I remember when you guys first hired me, my first project was working on CoverHound's mobile application. And at that point, I had very minimal Rails experience, like maybe some maintenance stuff on the side. Like I could do Rails S and then RakeDB create and modify some templates. Like I knew what the templating language was, so I didn't have, you know, I didn't break anything necessarily. But in terms of any like editing functionality, that wasn't going to happen. And yeah, so you guys brought me in and you're like, all right, this is what we're working on. How familiar are you with CoffeeScript? And I was like, excuse me. and I just remember sitting down at the computer just being like, what is happening right now?
That's funny because that's still the same reaction you get from most people today.
Right.
CoffeeScript?
Excuse what? Me? Or you just get rage, just pure rage.
It's one of the two.
Yeah. But I mean, it was just like a really slow thing. Like nowadays, there's lots of focus on jump into boot camp and then you'll be programming in 6 months and you'll have a job. And for me, it wasn't that. And for me, it was a lot of hard work, a lot of working long hours, a lot of getting frustrated. So I guess maybe one of the most important things I've learned in learning how to program was how to manage frustration and how to manage my own feelings. Granted, I'm a pretty chill person. Anyone that's actually seen me in person or met me, I'm almost like a reptile. I don't move much. I'm not quiet. I don't make lots of noise. I don't move quickly. I don't make rash.
You like lying in the sun.
I like lying in the... Actually, I like being inside. I'm more like a newt in that regard.
I've seen you in the sun. I've seen you get pretty comfortable.
Yeah, but for me, like, so, I mean, all that to say, like, I'm a pretty, like, I'm not, I don't respond to emotions. Like a lot of other people might, I'm very easygoing. So for me, it was a lot easier to learn how to manage like getting frustrated or being upset or feeling like I'll never figure this out. But it still was a very important lesson for me to learn. And even through guitar, being frustrated with learning how to play and get better, programming was very much similar. I had to learn how to manage my frustrations and manage how I responded to things that didn't work out how I wanted them to.
Definitely. Yeah. I feel like that sort of stubbornness in a way is something that I picked up very early as well. My first computer was this old DOS Windows 3.1 box. It had 16 colors and I don't even remember how many megabytes of disk space, but I assure you it was many. It was a great computer to learn on though, because I didn't have internet at the time. So I couldn't look things up. I had to figure them out on my own. I had to read, you know, documentation that was bundled with software. The video card that I had was capable of outputting 256 colors, which would be awesome because obviously then I could look at pictures.
Right.
But figuring that out, like figuring out how to get that driver, I ended up going to like a library or something, I think, and downloading the driver onto a floppy. Something ridiculous like that. It was all very, very convoluted at the time.
Sure.
But I think that was actually a great way to get started with computers because it did teach me that ability to stick with a problem, even a weird, small problem that you probably should give up on. I feel like that's a lot of programming tasks, right? Where it just feels like such a such an insignificant thing, but at the end of the day, it has to get done. And that's how it was for me. First computer was DOS and Windows 3.1. And then I got a Windows 95 computer, which, of course, then the big nightmare was drivers. Because back in the day, anytime you plugged anything into your computer, it meant you had to probably go find your install floppies or install disk, depending on the year, and then run those and add a new component. And maybe at 1995, I first got internet, dial-up internet. And maybe you would have to go look around to find drivers or find some missing file to get something to work. So it was a lot of that for a very long time. Even for just simple stuff like playing games, it was often a process to get those installed. Then my first actual experience with programming was in 1999. I had a little HTML class in school. And basically that was me working in Notepad to make static sites. And I don't mean like Notepad++ or some actual kind of text editor for programmers. I mean literally Notepad.exe in Windows, which is just, it just lets you type letters into a box and save the file. That's all it is. So that was how I made my first websites. They were obviously very simple because of just what the internet was at the time, as well as that limitation of using Notepad. Your text editor really does make such a big difference in what you're able to output easily.
Yeah, it does.
But at that point, I actually wasn't somebody who was like, oh, I want to learn to make websites. I want to be a developer for a living. I had no interest in that. At the time, I actually wanted to do IT for a living. I just wanted to fix computers because that's what my dad did. So he at the time was like, well, yeah, I mean, you could do this, but you should really probably be learning something like Perl and Linux and become a programmer. But I said, no, man, yeah, that's not what I want to do. I just want to fix computers. You know, I just want to make broken computers not be broken anymore.
Right.
So I kept with that attitude for a long time. But at the same time, I had an interest in making websites because it was a thing where I could actually create something from nothing in a way. I could have an idea in my head and then actually make it appear on the screen. And that was really cool. So that was something that I kept playing with. Around 2001, I got a program called NetObjects Fusion. I don't even know if this is still around, but it was a combination of a WYSIWYG editor where you could drag and drop items onto the page, but you could also edit the underlying HTML and stuff like that. So that was kind of an interesting thing, and I used that for a couple years. During that time, I had a couple different websites. There was a place called TK. I don't even remember what it stands for, but this was a TLD, .tk, where you could actually just get them for free. And obviously, as a kid, I had no money. So I had paulsplace.tk, which was like a manual blog, basically. I just kind of wrote journal entries of a sort and just posted them on my static website. I would just re-upload the files to some free hosting plan with ads all over it. And that was just my website. That was just my place to have something that I made on the internet.
You want to know what my first actual website was?
What?
It was on Angel Fire, and it was a website full of Dragon Ball Z animated GIFs.
Nice. That's awesome.
But it was something I made. Like you said, it was something that I created and anyone could look at it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's something that is very common to a lot of people that started early in the web. Just being able to make something felt so good. Make something, just have an idea, and then actually create that feels awesome. Around that time is also when I had my first JavaScript experience. So I was in my WYSIWYG editor with manual editing capabilities, and one of the first things I did, it was Christmas time, and so I figured, you know, I want my space on the internet to be festive. I'm gonna find some JavaScript snow. I don't really know what JavaScript is, but I know it can make snow on my website. So I found that, copy-pasted it. It didn't work. Tried debugging it for hours and hours and hours. Again, we come back to the stubbornness. And finally, I was able to put snow on my website for December. And that felt pretty great. I was like, oh, this is cool. I tried some other types of programming around that time too. I tried BASIC actually on that old DOS machine again. I had no interest. It took hours to make like a silly fireworks simulation. And it was just not something I wanted to do.
Right.
I still definitely wanted to do IT. So actually, in 2004, I got my first job in IT. I got an internship at a local company, and it had nothing to do with dev. It was, you know, basic stuff like setting up new computers for new hires and organizing all of our equipment, handling inventory, that sort of thing. So I was doing that in addition to finishing up school. Then MySpace came out. MySpace came out end of 2003, I believe, but I started using it in 2004. And this is kind of really when I started learning a bit more about actual design and some CSS basics. A lot of people probably won't remember this, but at the time, CSS was still in transition very much. A lot of people were still using table-based layouts. I think many, maybe even most people were using table-based layouts. So CSS was very much in its infancy. At this point, I just wrapped my head around it a little bit. And remember, this is all happening within MySpace itself. So of course, I was limited by what you could do there as well. But I feel like I got some pretty strong foundational principles there.
As limiting as it was, you could do quite a bit of creative things with it. It kind of forced you to think out of the box to kind of get around the constraints they had in place. But you could do a lot of stuff with it.
Oh yeah, a lot of the things you had to do to make it look nice were very hacky, but you could pretty much design whatever you wanted. Like, it was possible to do full takeovers and then just inject your own HTML, which sounds ludicrous now on a social network. But at the time, it was awesome, and I learned a lot of HTML and CSS skills there. So I'm very grateful for that, actually.
What kind of blows me away is when I think about some of my first experience with JavaScript is when I was in a band and I was trying to figure out, how do I spam as many people on Facebook as possible? And the answer was JavaScript.
The answer usually is JavaScript, let's be fair.
Yeah, that is true.
So I actually kind of continued that whole learning from social networks thing. When Tumblr came out in 2007, I was very early on that train. I was so excited about Tumblr and I loved it. And I actually started making themes for distribution. I had a couple relatively successful ones, which is pretty cool. That really pushed me to learn design and how to design for a system. Because instead of just making whatever I wanted my MySpace to look like, I actually had to work within Tumblr's constraints. It was like, you have to have different designs for these post types, and you have to support all the different things that Tumblr supported at the time. And so I learned kind of to work both on the design and the dev side with requirements at that point. And I also started to mess with JavaScript more, because obviously you want to do cool stuff in your Tumblr theme. So at this point, I was basically, how you mentioned before, working with jQuery, just copying plugins and hoping they worked. I would use, you know, jQuery or MooTools or, you know, sometimes both, if I couldn't get just one to work. And it was a mess, but I actually kind of started to understand, oh, JavaScript is actually a programming language and I can do whatever I want with it. It's just a matter of learning how these pieces fit together. So I did a fair bit on Tumblr. And during this time, I was still working that IT job. It had turned from an internship. When I graduated, it turned into a full-time job. So I was doing that full-time. But then in around 2008, on the side, I started doing some freelance website stuff. These were just like one-off sites for local people. Very simple stuff. Static with just a few pages. And I was charging a $450 flat rate. Because, sure, that sounds about right for a website, right?
Yeah, that's about what I was charging for WordPress theme development.
How young we were.
Yeah. I don't want to think about it anymore.
So I was doing that on the side. And then I also started kind of integrating some dev stuff into my IT job. So we would do things like switch email servers. And of course, we have to write up a guide for that. How do you set this up with your brand new iPhone? Because 2007 iPhone, wow. And how do you set this up with your BlackBerry? How do you set this up on your laptop? And I would do stuff like create microsites for that, walked people through it, that explained it and showed, had visuals and animations and things like that. And this was also the first time that I worked with an API. We had the phone system. You either had to type in on the phones whenever you wanted to add a new person, and it was very tedious, but they had a JSON API. So that was actually the first time that I worked with another system that had an API, and I wrote a front end for it. So that was kind of where I really started getting my hands into useful dev that people will hire you for beyond just skinning a website.
That's nuts, because I didn't experience any API work until like after I joined Octopus.
Yeah, so it was just kind of one of those things where it happened out of necessity, because I was on the IT team and we had this problem and I knew something about programming, so I just kind of picked it up and ran with it. If I remember correctly, I didn't actually have a JSON parser. I was manually editing the JSON strings in the code. So obviously not highly technical stuff here. It was very, very brute force, but it was the first time I was like, this is an API. This is something I can interact with and create a tool to use. So I was still at that IT job. I was pulling some elements of dev into it. And then actually at that same company, a opportunity opened up to switch over to development. So I did that. And that was my first full-time programming job. That was in 2010. So I transferred over from IT. And one of the products I maintained were our set of internal tools. And these were all written in PHP. They were all raw SQL. It was very messy. But I kind of got my first taste of backend there. I had a bit of PHP experience from previous, just messing around, but this is the first time I really got my hands dirty on a large backend projects. The other primary product I worked on was one of our consumer face end user facing products, I guess you could say. And this was a thing that actually had to be written out in pure JavaScript because it had a very small maximum payload size. Basically, it had to fit within the space of a couple packets. It had to be very small, so there was no jQuery, there was no animation libraries, there was nothing. I just had to learn to write animations from scratch, and I had to learn to do stuff like sending beacon requests with hacked in image tags, that sort of thing. And just kind of weird things like that, but that was when I first really started picking up actual programming skills instead of just using jQuery, instead of just using, you know, whatever other tools. It was actually learning how does JavaScript animation work. I have no idea. I guess I need to figure that out because I have this task where I need to know how to implement that from scratch. So that kind of thing. And that was a really big deal for me. And I actually worked with a guy named Cameron at this point who was very extraordinarily patient and very extraordinarily smart. And he taught me a lot about how to actually go from knowing enough to patch something together to actually turn that into something that's at least somewhat reusable and maintainable.
That's pretty amazing for me to hear because it's so different than my experience in learning. Mine was like a slow ramp up, you know, basically using as many frameworks or tools I possibly could to do the least amount of work or thinking that I possibly could. And then slowly moved into actually more programming, you know, having learned how to do backend stuff and actual real JavaScript programming.
I think they're actually pretty similar, though, really. Because remember, I started doing this stuff years before. I started messing with JavaScript around the early Tumblr days, 2007, 2008. And I didn't get this job until 2010. So there's a couple years there of like definitely doing things all wrong. All right, so 2010, 2011, I'm still at this job. I actually got my first taste of Backbone there. So Backbone had just come out. It was like one of the first, if not the first, major client-side MVC things. So I got to play with that pretty early on, that as well as Node.js, which was pretty cool and set me up well for the next couple of years. And then in 2012, I got a job at Octopus, which is right around the time that we met. And basically, I sat down at that job and they were like, here, make this Rails app. Yeah, I have like a couple weeks of Ruby experience, mostly just templating, but I guess I'm going to make Rails apps now.
Yeah.
And so I just learned to do that, sat down and learned to do it. Thankfully, I was at a point where because of the kind of foundational stuff I got with JavaScript in the previous job that I was actually able to pick it up pretty quickly. And that's something that I've been taking forward since then. When I started at Imagix, they were basically like, hey, here, write some Python. Well, I've written 10 lines of Python before, but sure. I guess I know how to write Python now.
I mean, that says a lot about how important it is to actually spend time on foundational concepts, like learning how to learn how to program or learning how to learn how to learn a new language or something like that, right?
On-demand learning.
Yeah, we keep talking about it, but really, I mean, since you learned how to apply on-demand learning to things, it makes it much easier for you to be flexible in what you're doing.
So, yeah, I guess that's kind of both our histories then.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's lots of stuff we skipped over. So if anyone has any more specific questions or wants to talk about how many editors I tried when I first started, because I didn't like vanilla Notepad. I used Notepad Plus and then moved to JEdit. And then just there's so many things. So many things we could have talked about. I was like, there has to be a better way. And I just would not use it. It's just me being a little diva.
Rollbar is a great way to help find and fix errors in your apps. They integrate with every major language and framework in just minutes, letting you get set up and then back to work. Rollbar integrates with a bunch of great tools like Slack, GitHub, and Heroku so that you can get notified about events that matter wherever it's most helpful for you. I use Rollbar myself, and it's a great service that really is super easy to set up and use. They've got a great deal for Does Not Compute listeners, too. If you head over to rollbar.com/DNC and sign up, they'll give you 90 days of their bootstrap plan totally free. Thanks again to Rollbar, and make sure you sign up at rollbar.com/DNC. From Sean and myself, thanks very much for listening to Does Not Compute. We have a blast making it, and even more fun learning from all of you in the community. If you haven't yet, make sure you stop by the Spec Slack and say hi. You can sign up right now at spec.fm/slack. We'll be right back. I've been doing this for 17 years, Sean. That's kind of weird. It's a lot of years.
That is a lot of years.
Huh.
55 years. 55 years.